Chapter 19.
I'm sorry, 21st and then 19. We'll start with
13 and 18.
What am I
going to be quizzed on? Next week.
You know, here's my problem. I knew I had this somewhere, and I have now two copies of that. Okay. Too efficient. That always happens at my house. Okay. Okay, so, like in previous chapters, we're going to kind of go through things in order. The temporal artery, remember we talked about that with the head, yes.
Did you want to do chapter 19 first? Or are we
gonna I'm going to start with 21st, and then I'll backtrack to 19 next week.
I just didn't know.
Yeah.
Which one is this?
We've got to kind of work our way up to the heart, I guess. Because this has got some of the lymphatic stuff in there that I think will be helpful to kind of clarify some of the, it ties in a little bit more with what we're doing, what we talked about already. Temporal artery. Remember we talked about that earlier. Where is the temporal artery at? Right up here. What about your temple? Carotid arteries on the neck. In the arm, the brachial artery runs between the bicep-tricep furrow, and then it kind of surfaces. You won't feel it up here, but it surfaces at the antecubital fossa, so you can feel it there. If you feel on there, you can actually feel your brachial pulse. It bifurcates at this point and goes down into the radial and the ulnar. The ulnar is harder to feel. The radial is the one you take the pulse with, typically. Ulnar, you could find a pulse, but it's a little harder because it's deeper. In the leg, we have the femoral artery, which passes underneath the inguinal ligament, travels down the thigh, courses posteriorly, and then at that point, it's the popliteal artery. And if you sometimes you can, behind the knee, find that pulse. It is tough, so don't necessarily think if you can't find it that you're going to fail a course or fail anything else. A lot of times it's just hard to find. So just something to just kind of keep practicing with. Behind the knee there is the popliteal artery. And then that divides into an anterior and posterior tibial artery. The anterior tibial then goes down to the foot and becomes the dorsalis pedis, which is along the top of the foot. I can't pick my foot up any higher than that. So. But if you feel along the top of your foot bones, you'll feel that pulse. The posterior tibialis comes down into the medial side of the foot, and you'll be able to feel that pulse. So you just kind of practice those, because that'll be something that on your test out, you'll be kind of feeling pulses. So that's something to kind of start thinking about. In the arms, there's two types of veins, the superficial and deep. The superficial veins are responsible for most of the venous return back to the heart, and where it's going to get reoxygenated and sent back out again. They're located in the subcutaneous tissue. In the leg, there's three types of veins. The deep, the superficial, and then the perforators. The deep veins run alongside the deep arteries. The deep take care of most of the venous return from the leg. The superficial, there's two, the great saphenous and the small saphenous. And there's a page 531 in your book has a picture. That may be helpful. And I think we may even get to looking at it in just a second. But what happens is the perforators connect the deep veins and the superficial veins, which is why sometimes you have people that their veins, if one vein kind of gets occluded, another one kind of picks up the slack. So you kind of have this where this connects the two sets of veins. The perforators have a set of valves in them that are one-way valves, and it keeps the blood from the superficial, it routes the blood from the superficial veins into the deep veins, but doesn't let it backflow back into the superficial veins. So it's moving blood from superficial to deep so that it can ultimately go back up to the heart, get reoxygenated, and go out again. That makes sense? Got this set of valves that are helping you out. We talked kind of a little bit about the artery coming down here, brachial. Here's where it bifurcates, and you have the ulnar on this side. Thumb side is the radial. Vessels in the leg. We talked about how here's your femoral coming down, comes into the popliteal, and it kind of breaks off into the other, the anterior tibial. You can see the posterior tibials over there. So you can kind of get an idea of what's happening there. And your pedal pulses are going to be right here. They're feeling on this part of the foot. Veins, remember, are draining deoxygenated blood. So this is kind of our dirty blood that's going back up to get cleaned out and then reoxygenated to where we can send it back to the organs and tissues and cells in the body. Just like the heart is a pump that's pumping out to the arteries, it's a highly pressurized system. Veins are a low pressurized system. There isn't any pump that's helping the veins along, like the arteries have the heart to do. Blood is moved by contracting skeletal muscles that basically kind of milk blood back toward the heart. There's also a little bit of a gradient that works to help move blood along. For example, when you breathe, that makes the thoracic pressure decrease and abdominal pressure increase during inspiration and expiration to where that kind of helps move that blood along. Intraluminal valves ensure that the blood's moving in one direction. Veins also have the ability to kind of stretch so that it kind of reduces some of the stress on the heart a little bit. Now, walking makes the calf muscles contract and relax. So that helps us move the blood back to our heart. If you think about it, we're gonna look at what that's all due to those one-way valves. Remember we talked about between the superficial and the deep, you know, that moves it over and then it keeps it over. And that as long as we're walking around, that's gonna help move that blood from my lower extremities up to my heart. Now, problems with any of those three things, the skeletal muscles, the pressure gradient, or the intraluminal valves, is gonna cause venous stasis. And that means that blood is kind of pooling and staying down there in the lower extremities and not making its way back up to the heart. What happens to the extremity then when we have venous stasis? Cool. We'll swell. We have definite swelling. Okay, so who is at risk for somebody who's the person that's at risk for venous stasis? The person who works at a desk 8 hours per day. Not getting up and moving around. Remember, we talked about walking helps that blood flow get moving and up toward the heart. So that person's at risk. What about the athlete who's taking a long flight to Europe? Yeah, that's why they tell you in an airplane, get up and walk around. You know, you really shouldn't sit more than a couple hours at a time. I'm someone with varicose veins. Those veins are already stretched and tortuous, where they're already enlarged, and that basically varicose veins happen because the valves are not really competent anymore. So that person's at risk. Mm-hmm. Someone who has thicker blood, it's going to be harder to get that blood up to the heart, so same thing. Pulses are graded on a scale, so if you're taking somebody's pulse and it feels pretty normal, you call it a 2+. If it feels weak, you call it a 1+. If it's bounding, like boom, 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 that's a 3+. If you don't feel it at all, and that's something where if you don't feel it at all, get somebody else, especially when you're new at it, double check. I mean, sometimes, you know, you have people who are diabetics, they maybe have peripheral neuropathy and problems with their circulation in their feet, but maybe they don't have fetal pulses anymore. So that's something that you just want to have somebody else double check. Hey, I'm not feeling a pulse here. Can you find anything? Before you'd actually say, yes, it's absent. Okay. The lymphatics. The right lymphatic duct. Is there a picture? Yeah. Okay. So the right lymphatic duct, if you can kind of look at this darker area, where it covers the right side of the head, the right side of the chest, and the right arm. I want to go back to here. Basically, that empties into the right subclavian vein. And it's draining all those areas and taking care of the right upper section of the liver as well. The thoracic duct takes care of the rest of the body and empties into the left subclavian. So what the function of the lymphatics is, you're conserving fluid. You're also conserving plasma proteins that may leak out into the capillaries. They do form a major part of the immune system. It's protecting the body. Basically, when you get an infection and you have an enlarged lymph node, your body's trying to contain the infection to that area and not let it spread throughout the body. So that's where that's kind of coming from. The lymphatics also help you absorb lipids from the intestinal tract. Oh, I'm like, what is that? We talked a little bit about the lymph nodes. They're small oval clumps of lymphatic tissue that are located at various intervals along the vessels. So the cervical nodes, the ones that are up in here, are going to drain their head and neck. The axillary nodes, you've got nodes under your lymph arm. Underarm, that are going to drain the breast and the upper arm. The epitrochlear node is located in the antecubital fossa, so this part right here. It drains the hand and lower arm. So if you've got somebody who, again, my boys, one of them picked out a hangnail, pick, got infected, has a nice streak going up his arm. Checking that epitrochlear node and probably even axillary node with the streak that went up above the antecubital area. So checking those nodes out would have been important. Inguinal nodes are located in the groin, so right in here. And they are going to drain most of the lymph from the lower extremity, the external genitalia, and the anterior abdominal wall. There are some related organs to the lymphatic system. The spleen, where's the spleen located? Back to anatomy. Left side. Liver's on the right, spleen's on the left. There's four functions to the spleen. One of them is destroying old red blood cells. That's something to get rid of the ones that are old. I mean, they're not really helpful anymore. It also produces antibodies. It's a storage site for RBCs. And it filters microorganisms from the blood. Another related organ is the tonsils. And you actually have three different kinds of tonsillar tissue. The palatine tonsils, which are the ones you normally think of when you look in the back of the throat, you think of somebody with tonsillitis. And the adenoid tissue, and then the lingual tonsils, which are in the kind of underneath the in the mouth, but toward the back, and you really can't see them. And they are located at the entrance to the respiratory and GI tracts, respond to local inflammation. So you're going to have somebody who has a tonsillitis, that's trying to localize the infection to that area. The thymus is a gland that's located behind the sternum, in front of the aorta, so kind of in this vicinity right here, and there's a picture later on, I think, of that. They really don't know what the function is in terms of what for adults. They know that in children that it helps develop the T lymphocytes. Let's see. Yes, thyroid is, or the thymus is here. So, you know, we kind of talked about some of the, see the label, there's a good picture of the label console. Really, it's not anything you're going to see or feel, but it's there. But we've got all the different organs that actually help you out, keep you well. So subjective data, we want to know if they have any leg pains or cramps and where those are located. Are there any skin changes? You know, any redness, any pallor? What is pallor?
Pale.
Or whiteness to it. Blueness, or what's another word for blueness?
Cyanosis.
Is there any swelling in one or both legs? When did the swelling start? Any swollen glands? Most people will know, they're not going to necessarily know what a lymph node is, but if you say, do you have any swollen glands, they're going to know what you're talking about. Are they more lumps or are they more kernel in size? Where are they at in the body? How long have they been there? You want to know what medication that they're taking. And the other thing to kind of keep in mind is sometimes hormone, either whether it be hormone replacement or oral contraceptives, can also play a role here as well. Preparation. You want to have a comfortable room. Ideally, that's going to prevent a room that's really hot. Somebody's potentially going to vasodilate. So a room that's cold, they're going to vasoconstrict because they're shivering, they're cold, and they're trying to stay warm. You want to examine the arms while you're doing vital signs. We'll take a look at the skin. And when you're doing like a full head to toe, you wouldn't necessarily examine the legs until after you were done doing an abdominal exam. So you're going to kind of put that a little bit later. You're thinking about head to toe. You're going to examine the arms toward the beginning, but the legs will come later. When you're done with the abdominal exam, and you actually have them stand, you also look at their legs while they're standing as well. Let's see. Remember the profile sign. Remember we talked about that with skin. That's with the clubbing. Capillary refill, just pressing down on the nail bed. How quickly does it respond and go back to normal color? Are things symmetrical? What's the pulse? You know, check your various pulses. The modified Allen test. Let me borrow you again, Sharon, and see if I can get this to go. Because if you really get it to do, it's quite shocking. I'm going to use your one without the rest. Or there you go. Okay. I have you turn face to class here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to occlude the radial and the ulnar. Okay, so all I'm doing is this. Press it hard. Okay. Drop your hand. Just let it drop. Make a fist several times now for me.
Just turn
them down. I can count.
I'm just... Okay. See how our hands come turning white?
Yeah.
Okay, watch. Okay, now open. The color is coming back, even though I'm still occluding. So that's... Sorry, am I probably pushing you hard? Okay, so that's how you do the Allen test. You're pushing in on both. You have them pump their fist. Things turn white. You lift up on the ulnar side. The blood flow should all come back. Because there's kind of some collateral circulation going on, ideally. That's what that test is.
You lift up on the ulnar side.
Ulnar side. Okay, so radial pulse is on the thumb side. Make sure you know that. We have corrected senior nursing students who are trying to take a radial pulse on the pinky side. I don't know why. Somewhere they missed that. So make sure you know that. Ulnar pulse is on the pinky side. Brachial pulse at the antecubital fossa. Usually it's kind of toward the more medial side, but you're going to have to kind of feel around. Mine is kind of barely medial. So just kind of feel around. The legs, you want to look at the skin and hair. If the person has hair on their legs, if they don't have hair on their legs, that can maybe tell you something. Men don't tend to shave, but sometimes men do for one reason or another. Maybe they're a swimmer and they don't want to have the drag in the walk, whatever. But you know, if you don't have hair on the legs, do you have hair follicles? Or is there some kind of a reason behind why they don't have hair on the legs? the temperature. Is it warm? Is it cool? The calf muscle, is it well structured? You don't want to check for inguinal lymph nodes and the pulse, all your different pulses, and we've kind of talked about that. You want to, manual compression test, you don't have to worry about it. I actually took that slide out, I think. So, your femoral pulse is the one that's right up here. And if, you know, when you go to bed tonight, sit there and try to find your femoral pulse. That'll at least give you practice with it, because it's probably not something you're going to do on your lab partner per se, unless they're wearing like yoga pants or something real thin. Popliteal pulse, that's the one behind the knee, usually easiest if they're kind of turned toward the side or laying on their bellies and you're kind of feeling it in there.
I feel the
chest. I don't like to use a thumb. I know, I don't like to use a thumb. It's because I'm afraid I'm going to be feeling my own.
Yeah, that's right.
Posterior tibial, remember that's on the medial side. Can't tell you how many test outs I've had people trying to do it on the lateral side. Don't make that mistake. It's posterior tibial, medial side, so that's the inner side. Dorsalis pedis is on the top of the foot. That's one you have to be careful not to push too hard. Because you may include that, and you may not feel anything. You may think, oh, this person doesn't have a pedal pulse. And they may really do. So just kind of real lightly put your fingers there. Example of pitting edema. You push in, and you take your fingers away, and your imprint remains. And not like the fingernail mark I put on for Shannon here. This is actually fluid collection. And that does happen. You do see that. And you want to be looking for color changes. The ankle brachial index is actually something that's kind of interesting. If you take a brachial, which is your normal blood pressure, up here on the arm, you're going to take a reading in each arm. And let's suppose we get 124. You're going to take the higher measurement. Then you're going to put the blood pressure cuff just above the ankle. And then you can either put your stethoscope over the pedal pulse area or the posterior tibial, and you're going to get an ankle, basically like an ankle blood pressure. Then you're going to take your ankle pressure, divide it by your arm pressure. So if we got 132 in our ankle and we divide that by 124, we get 1.06. If somebody has claudication, which means that they're having some, they could potentially be having pain in the legs, they're having, the people who get up and they walk a short distance and they have pain in the legs. There's some issue with the patency of the veins and how well they're doing. So if you're getting a number that's just a little bit better than one, that's normal. You can see here it gets worse. Here we're having ischemia with possible tissue loss. Not good. So the lower the number, the worse. You can't have a negative number. But, you know, somewhere around 1 is what you want it to be. 1.03, 1.06, 1.07. In that area is fine. That reading is also something that's not necessarily as reliable in your diabetic patients. But it gives you an idea of how good the circulatory system is working in the lower extremity. And we talked about the weak thready pulse as being 1+, the full bounding as being 3. A water hammer or Corrigan's pulse, it's something that's at a normal, it's a greater than normal force, and then all of a sudden, boom. It's almost like what happened to the pulse, it's gone. It's seen in aortic, the aortic valve when there's regurgitation. In other words, the valve isn't closed. You guys have all heard of it, like a reflux disease where they have like heartburn. Same thing in the valve. If you don't have a valve that doesn't work very well, you're going to have backflow of blood into a spot that it's not supposed to be. So that happens with the aortic valve when that has that reflux. Happens in patent ductus arteriosus, which is another heart condition that has to do with hole in the heart. Pulsus by geminis. the rhythm is coupled, so every other beat comes early, and then it has, there's a normal beat followed by a premature beat. Pulses alternans, we have a regular rhythm, but the force will vary, and that seems to happen in more in heart failure. I will be honest, these are not terms you see every day. So don't freak out if it's like, oh my gosh. Pulsus paradoxus, the beats have weaker amplitude with inspiration, and then they get, so as a person breathes in, they get weaker. As they breathe out, they get stronger again. So it's something you just gotta kind of key in on, is this what's happening with this patient? And I don't even know how to say the last one. But basically that means each pulse has two strong systolic peaks with a dip in between. So it's bump, 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 bump. Some sample charting with your subjective. Again, this is asking the patient what's going on. So we've asked the patient, they're saying that they don't have any leg pain, no skin changes or swelling or lymph node enlargement. Objective, this is what we're seeing, the inspection, the palpation, all pulses present, 2+ and equal bilaterally. You want to compare side to side. Lymphadenopathy means enlargement of the lymph nodes. So if we're saying no lymphadenopathy, that means no enlarged lymph nodes. I know, we get big words for these things that would just be easier to say with a few short words. Let's see. Okay. I'm going into some of the abnormal findings. Raynaud's syndrome, who's ever heard of Raynaud's? That's something that, I mean, we just had a patient diagnosed with this, and one guy wound up, he said he wanted to go to the ER and having multiple tests done, and their insurance didn't cover it, and he spent $8,000 to find out he has Raynaud's. It has to do with basically three different color changes that occur usually in the fingers, but sometimes it can occur in the toes. In response to either cold, vibration, or stress. First, they get really, really white colored, and they get this real pallor, and that happens because of arteriospasm, which means that with a spasm, there's not any blood supply going to that area momentarily. And then they turn blue. It's kind of, like, I think of this in my mind as kind of the red, white, and blue syndrome. They start with white, then they go blue, because there's a slight relaxation of the spasm, so they're getting just a little bitty trickle of blood. So blue's better than white, because that means that we're getting at least a tiny bit of blood. And then the return of blood into that dilated capillary bed, now everything turns red. And when they have that white and blue stage, they tend to be have some numbness. They may have some pain. When they get into the red stage, they tend to have a burning sensation. This is something that can last a few minutes to several hours. Usually it's occurring bilaterally, so their hands are just, I mean, they're maybe bright red and they're burning. Whereas before they were white, they kind of felt some numbness. So it's just a condition that occurs, just something to kind of be aware of. It does occur, I mean, we do see it. It's not like one of those things that you don't ever see. Lymphedema has to do with impeding drainage of the lymph. It can occur because of removal of lymph nodes. Sometimes you have we had a gentleman that had a broken hip, and he wasn't moving around as well, and so did not have the good venous return and did develop a lymphedema due to not moving around as well. Arterial sclerosis is due to chronic arterial insufficiency. Usually occurs at the toes, the heels, the ankle area. And these lesions, there's a picture on, did I write that page number down? 552. But the lesion will appear as a pale ischemic base. There's a well-defined edge and no bleeding. And if you contrast that to the venous stasis ulcer, it has bleeding, it has uneven edges. Those are the people who kind of look like their legs look almost kind of bluish in color. You can tell that they're not getting good circulation and they get an open area. That's where that venous stasis ulcer is. we talked a little bit about varicose veins, chronic venous insufficiency because those valves are not working the way they're supposed to. It's 3 times more common in women over the age of 45 than it is in men. So women are plagued. We're going to get naughty looking legs. And so they're having, those valves are permitting reflux. Back, remember the blood's moving from the superficial to the deep veins to be able to return from the, to the heart. Well, that blood is not getting into the deep veins. It's going back into the superficial veins. DVT, we mentioned that a little bit earlier. There's a thrombus that is usually caused by an inflammation or a blocked venous return or edema. Sometimes the cause could be prolonged bed rest. So if you have somebody who's on an airplane flight for 8 hours and doesn't get up and move around, that can be a potential cause. Somebody who has a history of varicose veins is at a higher risk for that. Somebody who is a cancer patient or has infection maybe is at a higher risk. Use of oral contraceptives. You know, you hear about don't use if you're a smoker over the age of 35. That's because of the increased risk of developing thrombosis. So that is definitely something that is looked at. If somebody has this is something that's going to require emergent care. They're going to have to be started on IV heparin and get that clot broken out, but get it broken up safely before we risk a pulmonary embolism. Occlusions are caused by atherosclerosis, which that's kind of like your cholesterol buildup problems. It starts off with kind of a fatty streak, then that turns into like a little flat area, then the blood vessel wall gets a little hardened in that area, and eventually a thrombus can form, or like a clot. It reduces blood flow because, you know, those blood cells are going through, and if there's a plaque on the artery, part of the artery wall is taken up, so the artery now is smaller, and the red blood cells can get snagged, which is how clots formed. Risk factors would be things like obesity, cigarette smoking, hypertension, diabetes, if you have high cholesterol, sedentary lifestyle, family history. Aneurysms are a sac that are formed by a dilation in the artery wall. The most common site is the aortic. You may hear the term a triple A. It's an abdominal aortic aneurysm, usually right here. And I remember the first time I saw one of those, I was like, oh my gosh, what is this? This thing is almost like come alive on this patient's abdomen. But there's actually the pulsing. I mean, it's actually a large sac, and they don't do anything with them until they reach a certain size, and then they'll surgically repair them. So it kind of freaked me out the first time I saw one. I'm like, oh my gosh. I had to go get my preceptor and say, hey, what is this? Well, that's just a triple A. Okay, never forgot that one. They're more frequent in men, and there's a picture on 554. So, a couple quick questions, and then we'll send you on the way. We're going to start next time with a couple of videos that will kind of go over heart sounds and where to listen and all that. We'll finish the heart. I doubt very seriously if we'll get into abdomen. We'll have a quiz on, one quiz will be on, you know what, I'm going to have to look at that. I'll tell you how you're going to see. You're going to study 13, 18, and 20. I can tell you that much. I'm not sure if I'll put which chapters will have, if they'll be 13 and 18 on one quiz, or 18 and 20, or how that'll work. Study 13, 18, and 20. Yes. Yes.
Have you ever
I do ask that all the time.
What do you say, no?
Yeah. I'll give you a study guide for the midterm. Okay. So on this person here, you're looking at somebody with claudication. What's going to be the most important thing here? B, distance patient can walk. The ABI should normally be what?
A.
A, slightly greater than 1. Good job. Good attention. I know this has been really intense trying to get caught up. Okay, so tonight you're working on lungs and lab. And then if you want to start heart a little bit, start kind of looking at some of the lymph nodes and those kinds of things, that's fine. Check, you know, if you want to start in on pulses a little bit, that's fine. We'll progress with heart into next week, and that's all you'll need for your test out there is the lungs and the heart. Okay, questions? Be gone. Yes, come on up.
She said 13, 18.
Oh, she worried about. Yes, my
I will email, and I do. I go through every single point, which is why I take the test. And when I finish the whole first section, I'll send out an email. Section one is done.
I'm for real.
Okay, see, that's what I brought up.
I think she's gonna go. She said, you want to? I said, yeah, I said, you can go and get some fun. She said, okay, I'm thinking about it.
Mention it to me. I don't know.
No, you need to go on her right now.
I need it.
Right now. I go, for example,
hello, I can ask after my quick.
I'll just make a quick number. I don't know what she's going to do. I have a name on my quick, now it shows that I'm in school. I go in and it's quick.